When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hey there, Paisani, and welcome back to another episode of the Italian-American Podcast. I'm John Viola, along with my partner in crime, the Italian-American Wikipedia, Mr. Patrick O'Boyle. It is Holy Week when this airs. It'll be Holy Saturday because we've been pushing.
12 o'clock, break the fast.
That's right, break the fast. Game. Yep, time to come to eat the pies. Everybody's going to be excited. A lot of work coming in the week before. I'm sure everybody's going to be making their family's iterations, but needless to say, Lent this year has been a good and reflective one for me. I'm very happy with where I am. And it's a great topic that we have ahead of us today that sort of fits in to the coming of Easter and a time that we're all reflecting around, hopefully, faith and what that faith means to our lives, or maybe the absence of it in some cases.
Faith in action is the protagonist of today's episode.
You're absolutely right. Yeah, that's very, very true. Today, we're going to be talking about not just a person and an amazing person, a saint, a real saint, first American saint, but also a project that has brought her, Mother Frances Xavier Cabrini, back into a well-deserved spotlight as of late, because we've been talking about this for years, you and I, right? You, Pat, have been around this project, but this new movie, Cabrini, I have never seen so many requests from our audience, our listeners, our new neighborhood members, asking us to talk about a topic. People are watching this film. They really want to talk about it. And you've been kind of sitting on this episode for a while because you've been around the two people we brought in here today who've been around this process from the earliest stages.
I was involved with this in the very beginning. And I kind of was disinvolved from the project because I never thought it would happen. If you want to say, do miracles still happen? The Cabrini movie is a miracle.
Yeah.
Because I guess it took maybe 15 years. About 15, 16 years, every possible calamity to throw this project off the rails hit, one after another.
Well, doesn't the devil do that?
Yeah, but you know what? Because God works in mysterious ways because the timing is perfect for when it came out.
Why?
I just think, you know, there's so much, we're in a really wacky world. There's a lot of wacky stuff going on. And I think that Cabrini addresses a lot of those issues.
You know, it's funny, the only time we've really talked about Mother Cabrini on the show, a little bit in our 4-part history of Italian America in the early days when we had the Power Hour. Talked about it on an episode, I remember, around when the city of New York had voted. They did this public vote about female statuary. They wanted to create statues of women, and Mother Cabrini was the overwhelming favorite to be immortalized in a statue. And then the mayor and his wife at the time, de Blasio and his wife, they decided to just switch up the list, and they came out with like all these different kind of, you know, radical figures. And a lot of people got up in arms, and to the point where then Governor Cuomo, created a statue commission. I was placed on it to build the statue of Mother Cabrini in New York City. We looked at sites in Brooklyn and Manhattan, and I knew of Mother Cabrini as the first American saint, right? All this history, but I really didn't know that much until I got activated on the commission and started to hear rumblings that this movie was really going to happen. Why don't you introduce our guests, because they've been around from the very beginning, I think.
I have Monsignor Paul Bocchicchio, a priest of the Archdiocese of Newark. And I have Jill DiBello, who's a Italian-American in a real hyphenated sense. She is an Italian-American born in the United States. As an adult, she moved to Italy and spent probably the majority of her life so far in Italy. She came back about 15 years ago. But she did journalism here and journalism there. And Father Paul, I know from many years from Holy Rosary in Jersey City back to the early 80s. Gilda, her niece married one of my best friends from college, so we have that connection. But the reason why they're here today is that they are the people that made the Cabrini movie happen. With the Eustace Wolfington, who's not with us, but they brought him on board, if I'm correct, and they are the people. If you had asked me 10 years ago, because this project's been going on for a long time, it was so far in the mire, so far in the mud, I didn't think it had a snowball's chance. And then when the timing was right, everything fell together, and they were able to bring it to completion. But besides my own impressions of seeing the movie, because if you're a person of no faith, I said this for years, Mother Cabrini should be an American experience on PBS.
Yeah.
And I think it's held against her that she was a Catholic nun. I think there's a prejudice against her that she's an Italian-American woman. Because if she belonged to another nationality and another religion, she would be so prominent in the United States. Because I don't think there is anyone who did more for the American immigration. I don't even know the word to use. Just general mercy and decency.
Yeah.
To the people who fell on the wayside. Some people came to America, made a lot of money, and did very well. Some people came to America and died and left orphan children with no one to take care of them. Cabrini's mission was to care for the downtrodden who didn't find an America with streets paved in gold.
Right.
And I think it's such a part of honor for us that she was an Italian-American.
Yeah.
You know, because she's the first. She became an American citizen. That's why she's the first canonized American citizen. She's
right.
A naturalized American citizen. But I've said enough because I think there's so much more for our guests to say today about how the Cabrini movie came to be.
Well, we're really happy to have you guys both here. Who amongst the two of you was the first to sort of come to this project? Chilton, was you?
Yes. Well, actually, I have to say the truth is Mother Maria Barbagallo in Codogno. And you know, of course, that Mother Cabrini founded her convent in the Missionary Sisters of the Sacred Heart of Jesus is the name of her order. And she founded the convent in Codogno in 1880. It was already an ancient Franciscan convent, dilapidated, not in use anymore. And Mother Cabrini asked her bishop at the time to send someone from out of Codogno to go and ask the cement producer that was hoarding cement bags in the convent to buy it because she thought they would get a better price. Mother Cabrini had this innate sense of entrepreneurship. No, of course. And so that happened. And Mother Maria Barbagallo is, I say, probably the human being closest to Mother Cabrini. She has been teaching the rule of Mother Cabrini for 65 years.
Wow.
And she was Superior General from 1984 to 1996. She is an historian, the Cabrini historian, and she is an author. And her biography is To the Ends of the Earth. That is a Mother Cabrini saying, motto.
No? Right.
So I was the Cabrini sisters' communications person, and Mother Maria sent me to a journalist, very famous Vatican journalist, and she also told me, and the famous journalist, we do not have the money in Italy or at Rai, cannot finance a movie like this. This is our life dream, so you need to get to Sister Mary Louise Sullivan in the United States. So to make a long story short, I brought the idea of the film to Sister Mary Louise Sullivan. We met at the Cabrini Shrine because I said, Sister, where is Mother Cabrini buried? I didn't know anything. And she said, let's meet at the shrine where she is buried. And I said, because I need to pray.
Yeah.
We had nothing, and I didn't know anyone. And so I prayed to Mother Cabrini that if you want this film made, please help.
And here we are. How many years ago was that?
That was in 2008.
Wow.
Yeah. In 2007, Mother Maria Barbagallo took me to Arcivescovo Celli, who was the Vatican head of communications. And so, actually, way back then, she did so much work for this film, and she did all the well, she's she's history and Cabrini history. So anytime the script writer, Rod Barr, needed information, since he doesn't speak Italian, he would call me, and Mother Maria and I worked
together.
Together a long time. Mm. And she, many ideas of the script are her ideas.
That's amazing. So the sisters who are living the legacy of Mother Cabrini, they were the ones who came out with this project from the very beginning.
Sister, well, actually, Mother Maria Barbagallo, because she had been approached by, Federico Fellini's wife, Giulia Masina. She died with a mass card of Mother Cabrini in her hand. And Federico Fellini was very, very famous, film director. And also, Sophia Loren and her husband,
Carlo Ponti.
Wanted to do their what? They wanted their wives to play the role of Mother Cabrini.
How about that?
It did not work out.
Can you imagine?
So
I'm sorry. I cannot see Sophia Loren as Mother Cabrini.
No.
With all due respect,
Monsignor knows what the very famous what. And I'll let him tell you what Sister Mary Louise met several times with Sophia Loren. Mother Maria Barbagallo met many times with Carlo Ponti and Giulietta Masina, the Fellini wife. And they started the idea. They wanted to do this film. So when Sister Mary Louise had met with Carlo Ponti and his sons, she came back to the famous, I forget her name. Do you remember? Who started Cabrini College, a very famous mother general in New York. And the mother general asked her, please take it from there, Monsignor.
Well, a story I heard was that the sisters very tactfully said to Sophia Loren that she didn't quite have Mother Cabrini's dimensions.
Well, the other way around. It's very hard to have Sophia Loren's dimensions.
The funny word is when Sister told Mother General in New York, well, how it went very well. So tell me, yes, Sophia Loren would like to play the role of Mother Cabrini. And the Mother General said, I think she is a little too bulky, was the word.
That's again, a polite.
That's the word.
Leave it to the church to find polite ways to express the limitations of somebody's natural abilities or talents.
Mother Ursula Bonfante. I saw when I was living at the Cabrini Institute, one of the Cabrini institutions in Philadelphia, of course, with Sister Mary Louise Sullivan. I saw they had, of course, the media room, and I saw pictures from the New York Times. Mother Ursula, she was the most beautiful, I think, even more than Grace Kelly.
Wow.
Just absolutely fantastic. And she, how do you say in English when you say escaped from your, she escaped from her household, from her parents, to go and join the Cabrini nuns.
Wow. God bless her.
With Mother Cabrini.
You've mentioned Philadelphia, New York, where Mother Cabrini's shrine is and where her mortal remains are. This film was made primarily in Buffalo, which is a place that Mother Cabrini has history. We spent last weekend, Brendan and I, in New Orleans. Everybody talks about Mother Cabrini. And here in New Jersey, in Brooklyn, I mean, she was everywhere. Father, give us a little bit of why this first American saint, this Italian American saint, is so impressive. What's it called when Padre Pio was in two places at one time?
By location.
This lady must have had tri and quadruple location, because everywhere you go in America, there's an institution founded by Mother Cabrini in her lifetime.
Well, the interesting thing was that there was a quote, and it is an exact quote from Mother Cabrini in the film, where she said to the Holy Father, "The world is too small for what I intend."
Wow.
And as frail as she was, she managed to, in her 67 years, to found 67 institutions, schools, hospitals, orphanages, in addition to visiting many other places where she didn't establish missions. I'm in Hoboken now, and it said that she was in Hoboken. You know, wherever the Italians were, she tried to be. And I think that she had that zeal that led her to believe that it was possible to establish something where there was a need. And she also had the gift of attracting women to her order, because at one point she had over 1,000 sisters.
Wow.
And every time she would open a new mission, she would either go back to Italy, or even she had some American vocations. And she established a novitiate here to train some of the American sisters. And she always had a place for them to go, you know, and a mission for them to accomplish.
Yeah, it was an interesting, I mean, we're going to talk about the film itself, because, you know, I remember prior to the film, somebody telling me a story about Mother Cabrini needing to make rent and drinking with a guy and saying, you know, basically saying to everybody, like, "Don't worry, the money will come. God will provide for it." Like, she never had any fear, right?
The story I had heard, I'm sure there's a historian that could corroborate or correct this, is that a New York WASP, is that a true story, Jill?
New York?
A WASPy New York businessman.
She went out drinking with someone?
No, I didn't say that. Put the gun back in the holster, Bill. No, what I'm saying is that he challenged her. I think maybe she needed $5,000 for one of her hospitals, a Columbus hospital. And he said to her something like, if you'll take X amount of whiskeys, I'll cut you the check.
And I in many years of reading, no.
That's what I had heard. And that she had down. That's why the whiskey with the mayor is in the movie.
Right.
That she downed the whiskey. She hit the challenge. And she said, "Okay, where's my check now?" And he cut the check. And the other sister who was with her, when she came down a little bit buzzed, said, "Mother, what happened?" She told her the story, and Mother Cabrini slept home on the trolley ride home. But she was a tenacious woman. That's what made her the hero of her time. She was a leader.
But she also had great faith in the fact that God was going to provide, right? Like, that's what I'm getting at, is this idea that, like, the money will come, which is a totally foreign concept for so many people. This idea that your faith is so real and thorough and genuine that you just go and do without having the resources, right? You may not have them tomorrow, but she knew they'd come. And the reason I bring that up is because for a project like this that had so many pitfalls along the way, we do have to talk about a singular gentleman who basically pushed this thing across with his own money, right? And a substantial amount of it. Can we talk a little bit about that?
You mean Eustace Wolfington, producer?
Yes,
the executive producer.
Yeah.
Actually, very wisely, very justly, when you see the film, executive producer, he put St. Francis Cabrini.
That's right.
And he as the co-executive producer. But when I came back to the United States, because Mother Barbagallo had sent me to Sister Mary Louise Sullivan at Cabrini College, and Sister said, "Well, we actually have many friends, and one of my best friends who is helping us at the college is Eustace Wolfington. I will take you to meet him. We will go and meet him. And if something happens that I can't, I'm not feeling up to making the meetings, please continue the meetings in relationship with Mr. Wolfington." So that's what happened. We brought the idea to Eustace Wolfington. And at a certain point, Monsignor came on board. That was in 2015.
Yes.
Because when Monsignor had told me, because we remained out of contact for a while. We met at the Cabrini Shrine in 2011 with Sister Mary Louise Sullivan, and the school and Comet were theirs. And I hadn't seen Mr. Wolfington for several years, from 2011 to 2015. And Monsignor at one point mentioned that, well, also with Nick Netta, no, very instrumental in financing and helping us have that big event. It was a Cabrini presentation event, no?
It was, in Tierra Senio in New York. Actually, Bishop DiMarzio was instrumental because he was a member there. But I recall that was probably, in many ways, a kickoff, you know. But again, we weren't at the point where there was much work that had been done on the film. It was still kind of a concept.
Mm-hmm. You know?
But I remember I got involved because I went back to my old parish, Holy Rosary, to say Mass in Italian, and a young man approached
me. One of my students at community college where I was teaching, at Rosario, no? Yes. And he said, I drive 2 hours to go to Mass in Italian to Jersey City.
Yeah. And we happened to be discussing it after Mass, standing by the statue of Mother Cabrini, which is very prominent in Holy Rosary. And we were talking about Mother Cabrini. I had mentioned to him that I have a family connection. My great-grandmother worked with Mother Cabrini in Our Lady of Pompeii Parish in Greenwich Village.
Yeah. I'm sure my wife's grandparents got married.
Yeah. That was my grandparents' parish, too. Wow. And he said, well, my teacher is working on a film on Mother Cabrini. And I said to him, well, if she wants any help, let me know. And next thing I know, I got a phone call from Gilda and the rest is history.
Yeah. Right.
And Eustace is not Italian-American.
No, but he said at the event in 2016 that he did have an Italian girlfriend.
All right. Just Italian by infection.
Remember that? Monsignor spoke.
Infection. Italian by infection. That's
Monsignor
perfect.
Monsignor spoke that evening to introduce the idea of the film. Eustace Wolfington, as his company is called Cabrini Assets Management, and also Bishop DiMarzio spoke that evening.
And so Eustace Wolfington has always had a devotion to Mother Cabrini.
Yes.
He started when he was a young married man, I believe. He was visiting the parish of St. Donato in Philadelphia, South Philly, where Mother Cabrini had established a mission. And while he was there, they were announcing a novena to Mother Cabrini. So he was fascinated, and he didn't know much about her. He had never heard about her. He made the novena and learned a lot about her. And he was particularly taken by the fact that her business acumen, you know, mm-hmm. the fact that she could establish all these, you know, missions,
yeah.
Again, with very few resources. And so he developed a great devotion to Mother Cabrini. As Gilda mentioned, he named his company, you know, Cabrini. That perhaps the foundation for his interest. And when Sister Mary Louise had asked him, because Eustace had been involved in several films already, Bella, Little Boy, and she asked him if he would consider a film on Mother Cabrini. And initially he said no.
Hmm.
But I think eventually she got through to him, and then the idea began to take shape.
And as I understand it, if we can say on the air, which all this stuff is public record on IMDb anyway, but he put his own money up to about $50 million behind this project. Is that correct?
A good chunk of it, because he did solicit funds from others, but I would think that, you know, most of it came from him.
That's an incredible devotion to Mother Cabrini. I always find that so admirable. And I've been in meetings with him where he's presented beforehand. I've been meeting with you, Father, and I've been in some of the screenings where he was there and he answered questions. So, you know, I give so much credit to this guy for his incredible personal devotion, not only to Mother Cabrini, but to the project. And let's talk a little bit about the film itself, because it's in theaters now, right? Made in Buffalo with a cast of both American and Italian actors, right?
Yeah.
It's receiving phenomenal praise. Everybody is really enthusiastic about this film and the young lady who's at the center of it. Who's the starring actress? What's her name?
Cristiana Dell'Anna. An Italian actress.
And she's getting rave reviews. She's a real tour de force in this movie, right? How did she come to the project?
I wanted to interject that Eustace always said that Mother Cabrini guided us, because then Sister Mary Louise Sullivan got sick and she had asked me to continue the relationship. So we are convinced that Mother Cabrini wanted this film done and she guided us. Christiana Delanna, I think the director chose her, or an agency. She had done some things on
Netflix, I believe.
Right, yeah. Right. But she's excellent, a great talent, and we actually don't know how she came, the first contact came about.
Just as it would normally in one of these projects, right? You know, you go out, casting calls, I'm sure, and these are the talents. Like my uncle, who's a filmmaker, saw the film the other day and sent me a text message saying, you know, I hope you go see this. He didn't know that I had seen it. He said, amazing film, what a star. And Giancarlo Giannini is...
Yes, he's not well known here, but he is a famous Italian actor.
I would think even in America, Giancarlo Giannini is a known entity, right? I hope. I mean...
Well, absolutely. No, I've asked around Americans that I speak to, but...
You don't hang out with great the right actor. People.
I mean, a top level, but he plays the Pope.
Yeah.
And he was so great in it that I remember leaving the theater saying...
Pope Leo XIII,
wouldn't mind a Pope like that. I mean, Giancarlo Giannini would make a great Pope. Wow, he was just magisterial in it. It was fantastic. And part of the reason that she's... Mother Cabrini is going back and forth to Rome during these times is she's kind of bucking the trends and... frankly, bucking the commands or limitations put on her by the Archbishop of New York at that point, right? I mean, she was a pretty rebellious...
And by the mayor of New York.
And by the... Why don't we talk about that? Why was... Mother Cabrini was a bit of a rebel, wasn't she?
Pardon me?
She was a bit of a rebel.
Well, I think she was determined that she felt she had a mission. And the interesting thing is she was very respectful of authority, but knew... that she was responsible to a higher authority.
Right.
In fact, she made that very clear historically to Archbishop Corrigan when he told her to go back to Italy. She said, I've been sent here on a higher authority.
Wow.
And I think that, you know, the interesting thing is the mayor is, even though Archbishop Corrigan was a historical figure, the mayor was not. It was a Mayor Grant who was mayor of New York at the time. This film is Mayor Gould. But I think he's the personification of all the opposition that she received. Yeah. So very much the same as in the film on Padre Pio, where they showed the opposition he received from the church, and it was all personified in one priest. You know, so I think that, you know, the mayor represented all the obstacles that she ran into in her attempts to establish things in New York.
It's funny, this Padre Pio film, not to be too tangential, but this came out last year, I think, right? This film on Padre Pio?
The film on Padre Pio?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm referring to an older...
Oh, you're...
I'm
thinking
version.
Of the new one that stars this young man, I think it's Shia LaBeouf or something like this, and apparently he had a conversion during the filming of this thing. Mm-hmm. I haven't seen it, so I can't speak to, you know, whether or not it was a good movie, but it's interesting to think, because one of the things that they talked about at the screening that I went to was the idea that this movie was made about a saint, about a Catholic nun, but with a sort of a de-emphasis on the Catholicity of it so that it didn't alienate people, right? It was a movie made for modern times to kind of say, this is applicable to anyone. This is an American figure. What's the balance, especially from your perspective, Father, to go out with a product like this, you know, make it accessible, but also not alienating?
Well, May I interject that Eustace, from the very beginning, always wanted and always says that he named his company, Cabrini Asset, a great entrepreneurial woman who happened to be a nun.
Yeah. But I mean, my question is more, you know, look, we live in an increasingly secular world, right? So going out and sharing something that has an evangelical root sometimes has to be done in a sensitive way, for better or worse. I'm sure you encounter this all the time, Father. You know, your parish is... What's the nature of this? How do you balance?
Well, I think my critique of the film, and actually the critique that the film is getting, especially from very devout Catholics, is that there's not much about any spirituality in the film at all. I think they're very suggested things. Like throughout the film, you see statues of the Sacred Heart or a picture of the Sacred Heart. And one scene, Mother Cabrini is actually, before she appears before the Italian Senate, she's in a chapel in prayer. I think much more could have been done, but I understand what they were, their tact was to try to make, they didn't want it to be dismissed as another religious film.
Right.
So I think my response to the criticism is that it's obvious that she had a source,
right,
you know, to her determination, that it was her faith. There was one line, I argue, they were going to eliminate it from the film, but every statue you see of Mother Cabrini, she's holding her scriptures open, and there's a quote from Philippians, "I can do all things in him who strengthens me." And that was the motto of her life in her biographies. And that was being eliminated from the film, and I argued that it should be put back in, and it was.
Mm.
There's a scene after she's diagnosed by the doctor of having, you know, really a fatal disease. She comes back to her sisters, and she said, "No matter what, what goes on, the mission will go on. And remember, we can do all things in him who strengthens us." So
yeah,
the quote did make it in. At times, I think that they could have been a little more explicit. I don't think it would have really rattled too many people if they did, but I understand the caution.
Yeah,
because they really wanted to, they wanted to sell the person and not have anything stand in the way of presenting Mother Cabrini as they did.
It's interesting, isn't it?
You know, Corrigan gets a tough rap in the movie as Archbishop of New York. First, I have to say he's a son of Newark.
Yes.
So he was the Bishop of Newark. He was born in Newark. He was the first American-born bishop of the diocese in Newark.
Mm.
He was also the first. He was also the president of Seton Hall, my alma mater, for a while.
Wow.
In 1880, he becomes a coadjutor bishop of New York, which means that he would be eventually, I think in 1884, 1885, the actual Archbishop of New York.
Who did he take over from? Hughes? No.
No.
Hughes is earlier.
I'm trying. That's a good question.
Anyway.
But there's two, because a lot of people have asked, like, what was the Pope's role in this? What was Corrigan's role in this? There's two things that have to be kind of understood about Corrigan. The first thing was that Corrigan was obsessed with the credit rating of the diocese.
Mm.
Because what had happened was the Roman Catholic Archdiocese in New York was so good at paying their bills on time, they never paid a mortgage a day late, that they could walk into any bank in New York and get credit for whatever they wanted without any problem, because they knew that New York always paid their bills on time. Some of the Italian priests who had come to New York didn't understand the American banking system. They didn't understand the mortgage system. Because in Italy, the state provided stuff under the Kingdom of the Two Sicilies or the Papal States. They built churches. So they would just go into a bank and say, okay, I want to borrow money to build a church. And then they'd miss a payment. Or what's the big deal about missing a payment? And then all of a sudden, so we'd get back to, and Corrigan, we just went apoplectic about that. So Corrigan was very concerned. In the movie, you see Corrigan always concerned about money.
Mm-hmm.
Because Corrigan had built a house of cards on credit.
Mm.
Because all these immigrants, they didn't have two nickels to rub together.
Right.
So the only way they were going to be able to build their schools, build their hospitals, build their orphan asylums, which there were so many orphans at the time, build their actual parish churches, was to be able to borrow money from WASP-controlled banks who really looked upon, and the majority of the time, these Irish immigrant priests to begin with.
Right.
So that in the movie, when you see that, that's a little bit in defense of Corrigan. Corrigan had gotten his hand slapped from the Holy See, from Pope Leo XIII. You see a little bit of that when Leo XIII sends a letter back. Italian priests in the United States had written letters to Rome complaining about Corrigan. Some of them were justified and some of them were very kind of over the top, especially with the Neapolitan priest. I mean, one letter says, like, your holiness, your countrymen are here in chains under the slavery of an Irish tyrant. Come send us relief. One trick against Corrigan was Corrigan did not allow the Italians to go to mass in the Irish churches. The Italians had to go to the basement. That was a policy in New York.
Wow.
Even though he supported national parish, so a national parish would be a parish for Italians only, he gave them a hard time with that in New York. And when he was kind of called out on the rug about this, he said, well, Italians smell, and that they're going to turn away. If I mix the Italians into the same church with the Irish, I'm going to lose Irish parishioners.
Wow.
That sounds horrific to us today. We have to understand that there was a real cultural clash
yeah.
that happened because the Irish church was a completely different entity than the Italian church. Now, that's 10 episodes of podcast.
Yeah. It's summed up, as I've learned from you, I think of, like, the contrast between, like, the Irish Jansenists, you know, keep everything hidden, right, everything down and quiet and in reserve, and then you go to southern Italy and you find people, you know, crawling behind the saints through the streets. I mean, this is a totally different...
Aaron had a very strong... I'm probably the most qualified person in the world to have this conversation. Yeah. The church in Ireland was all, since the time of the Reformation, especially since the time of Cromwell, had been treated like a moronic association for stupid Irish people. The Irish always felt they had a chip on their shoulder, that they had to prove their worth to their Anglo occupiers, you know, to their masters, right? So when they came to the United States, the Irish were very, very careful, mindful of presenting themselves in a way they thought would be found to be respectful and accepted by the WASPs. That's why we had schools like Georgetown. We were in the university business.
Right.
Number one, the Irish church thought that was very important to have schools.
Right.
Because the English had always used schools to turn the Irish people against the Irish language and against the Catholic religion. Cabrini was an advocate for schools. If I'm correct with that, Cabrini, I believe, also, even though Italian was taught in her schools, she was very strong about teaching English in her
English
schools.
English first, yes.
English first, because her theory was that these Italian kids are going to be living here.
Absolutely.
And they're going to need to learn how to speak English to integrate as Americans with their parents. Italian Americans and Hungarians were the two largest groups to return immigration. To go back to Europe, make money in America, and then go bring that money back to Europe, buy some goats, buy a farm, and continue. So a lot of the Italian parents were much more concerned that their kids learned to read and write in Italian. So when they went back, which didn't happen for the vast majority of them, they would be even better placed in Italian society. Well, we have a little bit of money now from America. My kids are well-educated. So in a lot of ways, Cabrini was on the same page with Corrigan, but there definitely was the chasm, A, of the financial situation. But though Cabrini, you know, when Cabrini's cause in the 1930s went before the Vatican, the Congregation for Saints. At that time, if you ever heard of a devil's advocate, so what happened in that they did away with that in the 60s, I think, the devil's advocate. But the way the system worked was when they were going to do the investigation if you should be proclaimed a saint, there would be a priest appointed whose job was to find every kind of bit of dirty could on you to say why you shouldn't be a saint. That's why he was called the devil's advocate.
Brendan's pointing to himself. He would be great at
Brendan
that.
Has to get on, because you got on one episode, now you're trying to whack me. I'm surprised there's pine nuts in the coffee, and then you're going to take my seat. Then this will become the Sicilian American podcast.
He got a lot of compliments, you know.
He's glowing like, oh, I'm on the podcast now. Oh, I'm a big star in Buffalo. But to get back, see, you're not the star of the show. Cabrini is, so we're going to get back to her now. So when the devil's advocate is working on a cause in the 30s, he couldn't find anything on her. And the only thing he could pounce on was that people said, how could a woman this straight-laced, you know, straight and narrow, be so good at business?
Yeah.
She'd buy properties. They would go. I mean, they were just blown away about her business acumen. She had a brain for numbers.
The lady was amazing. I mean, I think about this statue that we built, and you mentioned Bishop DiMarzio, who was my bishop. I was in Brooklyn until a couple of years ago. And a good friend of the family's. I mean, I'm really great. We still keep in touch with them. And I remember going through with the committee. We looked at two sites in Manhattan, one site in Brooklyn. And you could tell overwhelming, you know, numbers. We're going to vote for Manhattan, right, on the committee. And I think I voted Brooklyn the first round out of duty to my borough. But anyway, when we were doing this statue, we were talking about kind of how they were going to represent it. The artist decided to have Mother Cabrini, a young Mother Cabrini, looking out towards Ellis Island, and she's got a little boy and a little girl with her in this paper boat because she used to build these origami boats in her hometown, right, as a young kid and send them out as, like, missionaries.
She's a little girl.
Yeah,
a little girl.
She used to take little paper boats, put violets in the little boats, put them in this little river behind her house, and dream of being a missionary to China.
Isn't that amazing? Yeah. You think about this woman, like, as we talk about the movie, but I think back to my experience around the statue and, you know, I'm sick and tired of talking about Columbus Day, but I know a lot of times when we talk about Columbus Day, a lot of people will say, well, why don't we just call it Cabrini Day, right? Which is totally, to me, not one, not the other. But anyway, my point being, this is an amazing figure to encapsulate everything that's right about the Italian-American experience, because she was this bleeding heart of a tireless missionary. She came back and forth, 30 times to the United States. She was absolutely indefatigable in the places that she went. She was a businesswoman. She was everything, and she was everywhere. She really is, beyond being the first American saint, she's a story that just has so many layers. You know, you can see so many different types of people reflected in Mother Cabrini. And I think that that's happening with the movie. I think people are relating to it.
I think one thing that the movie portrays is that we're now in an age, let's say the last 20 or 30 years, where there's no cultural idea of what a nun is. So if you took an American television show, a movie from the 60s, there were so many hundreds of thousands of nuns teaching in parochial schools that even if you were a Protestant and whatever, you would have had some kind of encounter. There were nuns everywhere, maybe with the exception of like the Deep South. And I think the modern world doesn't know how to portray a nun, right? So they kind of portray them as pushovers or kind of like simpletons, or why would you want to have this kind of lifestyle, you know?
Yeah.
They portray really inaccurate, the most inaccurate portrayals of them. But Cabrini was a spitfire.
Yeah.
I mean, besides her interactions with Corrigan and the fact that she went to the Pope and said, I just want to do this, right? She's got herself a papal audience and said, this is my plan. Her letters, I mean, she was tough on the priest.
Every day. She wrote to her sisters every day.
And she was a sharp critic. Like she had no time for waste of time people.
Yeah.
And she beat up, they were Neapolitan Jesuits in Manhattan.
Neapolitan, I don't know. Jesuits?
They were Neapolitan Jesuits. And she's like, what are they doing here? They're not doing, I mean, she beat up, she took no prisoners. I mean,
she was a Northern Italian after all, right?
She's a Northern Italian, tough woman, took no prisoners.
Yeah.
She was the modern businesswoman, you know. I mean, I've said this, it was a nun in Nutley called Sister Romilda.
Yeah.
Monsignor Bocchicchio would know who she
very
is.
Well.
Sister Romilda could have run IBM.
Yeah.
She was a nun from Italy. I've never met a more competent person. She could have been a general in an army. I mean,
I used to speak of her as the modern day Mother Cabrini.
Yeah.
Really?
Absolutely.
Wow.
And there's certain women, religious, certain nuns, that just have that charisma.
Yeah.
And Cabrini is like the poster child of that.
I was the last, you know, I moved to Jersey. As a kid, went to a St. Patrick's school in Chatham, New Jersey, the most Irish experience a person of Italian heritage could have. And my graduating class of grade school, 1997, was the last to graduate, I think it was 125-year history at that point, with the Sisters of Christian Charity from Mendham. And, you know, school's done very well. It's a blue ribbon school. It's got all the certifications and, you know, really wonderful school, great parochial school. But there's something different about the charisma of a place when the sisters are gone. Yeah. And you make a great point, Pat. You know, we grew up with a nun in every other classroom and then, you know, a nun in every three classrooms, whatever it is, and habited sisters. Mm-hmm. And now, I remember being at visiting a church not long ago when we were away. I went for Mass, and they introduced sister, and a non-habited sister got up, and, you know, it didn't register my brain. But now you think there's generations of kids who probably have never really met
a sister in a habit, if a sister at all. But for the people, for that generation who never dealt with a nun, my father's sister's a nun.
Yeah.
Right? So it's close to home. Who never had a nun or who weren't raised Catholic or around Catholics. These women gave up a cardinal family in the flesh sense of having their own children to be mothers for everybody else's children.
Yeah.
So they made that sacrifice because, especially in a world that was overrun with orphans, you know, where people died at 35 with 10 kids and mom dies on Tuesday and dad dies from the same disease on Thursday. These nuns were absolutely necessary to keep children off the streets and out of horrible things, out of thievery, sexual abuse, trafficking, prostitution. I mean, there were so many horrible things, and that's what the sisters fought against. I mean, we are so removed from the idea. I mean, thank God, children today, for the most part, are really live lives of you know, beyond anything someone can imagine. 100
dream
years
of.
Plenty of clothes and plenty of toys and maybe an overindulgence. We can't imagine a world where children were so common and were so abandoned that you could have a street urchin. I mean, that you could have a child that's feral on the streets of New York sleeping on the streets the way that kittens do, that cats do today.
I'll tell you.
Those women and those Cabrini sisters gave up having their own. Think about the sacrifice. They gave up being mothers to their own children to take care of the children who were abandoned. That was the vocation of a Cabrini sister.
I had that conversation with one of my former teachers, who was a Sister Christian Charity, and I did a favor for her. She thanked me. This is not that long ago. It was a couple of years ago. And I call her all the time. I keep in touch with her, call her for advice. It's been 25 years. And I said, you know, you don't know how much you did for all of us and gave to all of us. You know, everybody owes. And I think a lot of people feel the same way. And I think, I don't want to give away too much of the movie because I really, really want to encourage everybody to go out and see it because, first and foremost, it's an amazing film. You're going to enjoy it from the perspective of a film. Secondly, because it's obviously an Italian-American icon and a great Catholic saint. But thirdly, frankly, because people look at these numbers. So go out and support this film so that the numbers look great, because we want more of these things to be made and more of these stories to be told. And we want to reward the good work and dedication that went into making this movie. So without giving too much away, I will say the opening scene of the movie is around that idea of a child who's losing his mother. And I would challenge anybody to go see this movie for the first 5-10 minutes of it is watching this kid. And it sets the table so you understand exactly why Mother Cabrini was so important, but it's a gut-wrenching scene. I mean, especially as an Italian-American, because this kid's dragging his dying mother around the city of New York, getting rejected because he's Italian. I challenge anybody to go sit through that without, you know, at least breaking down on the inside.
You know, I actually know a woman, she's about to turn 100, that was raised by the Cabrini sisters. So what happened in the early 1920s, her parents were from Cerami, Sicily. Her mother died very young. Her father, you know, back when men worked 12-hour days, worked on Saturdays, her father physically could not take care of young girls. So he went to the Cabrini sisters. They were in Arlington, New Jersey, right by where I live, now known as Kearney. And he asked the sisters to take his daughters in until he could remarry. So he wanted to find a wife that would be able to start a new family with and take care of his daughters. And she said that they were, you know, the tragedy of losing your mother at that age, but they were so wonderful to her, the sisters, that they were like other mothers to her.
Yeah.
And for her entire life until she got into advanced old age and while the sisters were still there, she would go every summer in July to visit the Cabrini sisters at St. Anthony's Orphanage, because she goes, they were like other mothers to me, to thank them and to connect that bond. So I think that, you know, you see, listen, not every story, especially in orphanages, and it was a rough time. Not every story, we're not trying to glass over.
No, not at all.
That, you know, there were good times, there were bad times, but I think that there's a lot to be said for the Italian orders who, you know, the Palatine sisters were here, the Filippini nuns who ran schools that gave up their own lives, right, gave up their own chance of having their own family to be mothers to, you know, the abandoned children of immigrants.
And even those who taught in schools, how much they meant to the children of immigrants or children that were immigrants themselves, like you said, acquiring the language, acquiring just an awareness of the country. I mean, you know, we talk about the benefits of Catholic education today. And look, let's be realistic, right? Catholic education is shrinking, right? There are very few teaching orders left. There are very few schools and parochial schools staffed with sisters anymore. There are less and less Catholic schools every year. That's the unfortunate economic situation. But as byproduct of Catholic education, I'm a great champion of it. And the truth of the matter is, in those generations, the people, like our ancestors, the immigrants, they desperately needed the church and those schools, right? Because it was the only thing protecting them. And frankly, nowadays, the church and those schools, they need us, the ancestors, more than the other way around.
Those schools were the instruments that allowed us to move into the middle class, the upper middle class, and to become, and those of us who were fortunate enough to become wealthy people, because the American WASPy system didn't want us there.
Right, exactly. Right?
So no matter what you say, they did not want us there. And the idea that we had parochial grammar schools, parochial high schools, Catholic colleges, it was a backdoor for so many Italian Americans to assimilate in an economic sense and to become doctors and lawyers and college professors and to go into professions that would have been blocked from them in the WASPy system, where we were kind of looked as very much other.
Yeah.
I would like to interject on the education subject. I would like to actually debunk a myth about Mother Cabrini. When she was prepared as a teacher, and in Italy it's called le magistrali, no? So I have heard some people say, well, she only graduated high school. No, no, and no. 25 years ago, when my son in Bologna was in elementary school, even then, 25 years ago, le magistrali, the magistrali equivalent to associate's degree, are much more valid than, I don't want to say master's degrees, but certainly,
yeah,
definitely, of undergraduate. What it is today, the magistrali, the associate's degree, 20, 25 years ago, are much more than the undergraduates here. And also about the prejudice against Italians. My godmother, Gloria, was in the 40s. Not many women in the 40s went to graduate school, no? And she remembers in 1946, when the New York Times, it was a big deal about the canonization of Mother Cabrini. And she said, you know what, Gilda? They stopped the publicity almost immediately because it was about Italians. No, and even now, I was talking to one of my ladies that I used to have in Italian class at the community college, and she said, even now, in a certain, I won't say the county where it is, but even now. So it was important to demonstrate the prejudice against Italians.
I grew up with always learning, because again, I grew up in a place with no other Italians, about St. Elizabeth Seton, right?
And
the first American-born saint, right? Born here, converted to Catholicism, but it's almost like you need a replacement for Mother Cabrini, right? Like this woman was born here. She's a little bit safer, a little more palatable. But, you know, you talk about the church, and as we wrap, it's important to acknowledge, you know, this is going to come out during Holy Week. We're recording a couple of days early. As this movie's coming out and being lauded and everybody's excited, and those of you who've been here from the beginning of this journey get to really enjoy the fruits of your labor and devotion, Cabrini College has announced that they are closing.
Now it became University, Cabrini University.
Cabrini University. I always think of Cabrini College.
Mother Ursula's, she started that.
Started that.
With Sister Mary Louise Sullivan.
They are going to be merged, I guess, into Villanova University in Philadelphia.
Oh, really? Right? I did not know that.
Yeah, they got bought, I guess, the campus. But, you know, we talk all the time about the shrine of Mother Cabrini being up in Morningside Heights, up at the tip of Manhattan.
Across the street from the museum, the cloisters.
The cloisters, yes. Right. And, you know, she's there in her corporeal form, would you call it? Her bodily form, right?
Yeah, the remains of Mother Cabrini.
Under glass, in the shrine. You could see it. But there was a time not that long ago, as this movie was being made, I think, or maybe a little before, where there was water damage coming in, the sisters couldn't. I mean, how much of this is about reintroducing the world to Mother Cabrini, and what's the hope for the future? Because it's one thing for a university to close. It's another thing for a shrine like this to, you know, be flooding. You know what I mean? What does this mean in terms of a chance to reintroduce this first American saint, this great Italian American saint, to the world?
I think this has been a wonderful opportunity. I think so many people who have seen the movie had no idea. You know, Eustace has always said, his quote, his mantra has been, you know, she's one of us, let's make her known. Mm. And, you know, I mean, just a quick anecdote that about her work here in New Jersey. She founded, as Pat mentioned, the orphanage. And the Cabrini sisters had the orphanage until probably the early 70s. Then they made it into a Montessori school. Mm. And then somewhere in around 1990, they were going to close, because they couldn't staff the school any longer. And the Assemblies of God wanted to buy the property.
Wow.
And the Archbishop would not allow that to happen. He found a donor. The donor bought the property for $4 million with the provision that a shrine to the Holy Face of Jesus be put there and Father Dante Di Girolamo be made a chaplain there. And that at that time, the neo-catechumenal community, which is very active in the diocese, were looking for a seminary. They were temporarily quartered in the Bronx. And Father Gino, who was the rector, was praying to Mother Cabrini to find him a place.
Wow.
And when the deal was finally settled and Father Gino came to look at the property, he asked what it was. And he was told that it was an orphanage found by Mother Cabrini. He almost fell over because he had been praying to her to find him a place.
Wow.
So it just shows how...
Can I just jump in to clarify for Monsignor, because all these parties are kind of passed to the other side now. The Italian-American Assemblies of God pastor, from what I've heard, who wanted to buy the place, was itching to smash everything in there.
Really?
The chapel was dedicated to St. Anthony, because Mother Cabrini was very dedicated to him. The main altar was to the Sacred Heart of Jesus, but there were murals in the chapel One was Mother Cabrini coming to America.
Wow.
With the Statue of Liberty. There was stuff like that. And he was, because he came from a branch of evangelicalism that was anti, so he just wanted to go in there with a sledgehammer and just break it all up.
Wow.
So we stepped, well, I didn't step in. I was in high school at the time, as a senior in high school. But I was there when it first opened up, so the Archdiocese stepped in and kept them from getting it. But the big block on that was he was like polishing his sledgehammer to go in there and crack all the Mother Cabrini statues. Which, even if you, from a religious standpoint, feel that statues are graven images, which they're not, the Mother Cabrini, she's still an Italian-American hero.
Yeah.
And you're still a member of the tribe.
That's exactly right.
But thank we saved it from the heretical hands on a hammer.
Italian-American hands, nonetheless.
Yes, It's always our own people.
It's always our own
people. He was advertising, because he was an Italian-American evangelical who used to speak with a Southern accent. Yeah, so he was the most Italian-American look, and the whole family's name was like Conchetta and Bruno and Antonio, but they sounded like they came from the depths of Alabama. It was a thing, and they were just... Italian Americans are wacky in any religion they're in. So I'm gonna go in there. So he had it. He had his sledgehammer ready. But
Mother Cabrini intercedes.
Mother Cabrini, she's got a lot of juice up there, and we were spared from the hammer of the heretic.
Well, I hope, if nothing else, the fact that this movie sends the message, shares the story, the fact that we can have guests like you two to share with us really how much of a process it was to get this made, and how much Mother Cabrini surely interceded to get this film out there. I hope it girds everybody else in our audience and gives them not only encouragement to see the movie and support and visit the shrine and all these kind of things, but also to recognize that nothing is impossible with the right intercession. And sometimes we forget that we can lean on saints like Mother Cabrini when we need it the most. And so I think this is a great message as we go off onto Easter Sunday, the day after this airs, tomorrow.
Buona Vashka.
Takes time. Maybe watch this movie over Pasquetta or the week after Easter. It's a good time to do it. And hope everybody's enjoying their Easter pies and their family and their faith. This is a most important day of the year for us. And I hope this adds a little something to everyone's
greatest
Easter.
Greatest night of the year.
It is the greatest night of the year, yeah. And you get to wake up and have Easter pie. Which is the
resurrected sicut.
and we're waiting, and we're all waiting. So from all of us at the Italian American Podcast, Buona Pasqua, happy Easter.
Buona Pasqua.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.